भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 28, called Jnana Yoga, text number 22. Avijja mano pyabhasate yo vyavaikariko rajasa sarga eshaha brahma svayam jyotirato vibhati Atma vikara chitram avijjamano pyavabhasate yo vaikariko rajasa sarga eshah brahma svayam jyotirato vibhati Brahmendriyartatma vikara chitram. Avijjamana. Actually not existing. Api.
Although.
Avabhasate.
Appears.
Yaha.
Which.
Vaikarikaha.
Vaikarikaha.
Manifestation of transformations. Rajasa.
Rajasa.
Of the mode of passion.
Sargaha.
The creation. Ishaha.
This.
Brahma.
Brahma.
The absolute truth. On the other hand. Swayam. Established in himself. Jyoti. Luminous. Ataha. Therefore. Vibhati.
Becomes manifest.
Brahma.
Brahma.
The absolute truth. Indriya.
Of the senses.
Artha.
Their objects.
Atma.
Atma.
The mind. Vikara.
And of the transformations.
Of the five gross elements. Chitram.
As the variety.
Although thus not existing in reality, this manifestation of transformations created from the mode of passion appears real, because the self-manifested, self-luminous absolute truth exhibits himself in the form of the material variety of the senses, the sense objects, the mind, and the elements of physical nature. Purport. The total material nature, pradhana, is originally undifferentiated and inert, but later it undergoes transformation when the Supreme Lord, through his time agent, glances upon it and activates the mode of passion. Material transformation thus takes place and is exhibited as the Lord's inferior energy. In contrast, the Supreme Lord's personal abode possesses eternal variety, which is the self-luminous internal opulence of the absolute truth, and is not subject to material creation, transformation, or annihilation. The material world is in this way simultaneously one with and different from the absolute truth. I'm going to read, there's two more verses here that don't have purport, so I'm going to read those as well, just for information. Evam svutam brahma viveka hetubhi parapava dena vishara dena Chitvatma sandeham upara meta svananda tushto kila kama kebhya Thus, clearly understanding by discriminating logic the unique position of the absolute truth, one should expertly refute one's misidentification with matter and cut to pieces all doubts about the identity of the self. Become satisfied in the soul's natural ecstasy, one should desist from all lusty engagements of the material senses. Natma vapu partivam indriyani devahi asuravayur jalam kutasaha manona matram tijana cha sattvam ahankriti kam chittir artasamyam. The material body made of earth is not the true self, nor are the senses their presiding demigods or the air of life, nor is the external air, water, or fire, or one's mind. All these are simply matter. Similarly, neither one's intelligence, material consciousness, nor ego, nor the elements of ether or earth, nor the objects of sense perception, nor even the primeval state of material equilibrium can be considered the actual identity of the soul. So, text 25 tomorrow. Om Jnana Chimirandasya Jnanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Vimitam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Vitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadahayam Tadati Svartadam Tikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pandunam Gayate Girim Yakripatamahamande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So here we have an analysis of the material energy and or description of the material energy and its relationship with the original absolute truth, the self-luminous, self-manifested, variegated nature of the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada mentions that we actually have all of the elements of the spiritual world in the material world. And we have the relationships that exist in the spiritual world, in the material world. And Prabhupada gives the example, just as we are sitting on the floor. So there's the mutual relationship. And then he mentions we have trees and animals that exist in the dasya relationship, and we have our friends. We have our friends, and so we have friendship. We have our parents, and so we have the vatsalya rasa. We have our lovers, and so we also have the conjugal rasa. And Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that the material world is actually a reflection of the spiritual world. And Prabhupada often cites the example that's given in the Bhagavad Gita of a tree whose which is situated upside down, so that the root is at the top and the branches and leaves and fruits and twigs and whatever is at the bottom. And of course we see that kind of a tree in a reflection. So Prabhupada explains that the material world is basically a reflection of the spiritual realm. And so therefore it has the same qualities, but what it doesn't have is the permanence. Instead of being sat, permanent, it's asat, it's temporary. Because those relationships, the nature of those relationships in the spiritual realm are permanent. They don't deteriorate, they don't fluctuate, they don't manifest one minute and then disappear the next. But the nature of those relationships, where the central point is Krishna, then those relationships are eternal. Sat. Sat chit ananda, full of. They're permanent, they're full of knowledge, and they're blissful. Whereas in the material world, it's asat. So that means here one minute, gone the next. It's always changing. If there's one constant in material existence, then it's not constant. Huh? This is the constancy of the material world, is that it's always flickering and changing. And that's why Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Matraspa Shastra Kuntaya Sitoshna Sukaduka Daha Agama Payano Nichas Tangs Tikchaspa Bharata, that one has to tolerate the material world and its changes because that's its nature. It is not designed to be a place of permanence. It's a place of impermanence, of perpetual change. So we see the manifestation of the spiritual world reflected in the material world, and so we see the elements or the basic relationships exist, but none of them are permanent. They're all temporary. And as a result, as is mentioned here, pushed primarily by the mode of passion. And of course, passion always gives rise to what? What is nature of happiness in the mode of passion? Huh? Distress, yes. The end result of happiness is distress. Why? Because you work so hard for something and then, poof, it's gone again. What you thought would make you happy in the mode of passion ends up leading you to distress. Which is why Krishna recommends that one seek pleasure not in material things, but one seek pleasure in things which are permanent. In the 11th chapter earlier on, Krishna mentions how pleasure in the mode of goodness is happiness, or happiness in the mode of goodness is satisfaction with the self. Self-satisfaction. Pleasure in the mode of passion is satisfaction with sense gratification. But that ultimately, it's not satisfying. It's not permanent. Pleasure in intoxication and degradation is happiness in the mode of ignorance. Right? And, you know, there's plenty of people who are happy being intoxicated. You can see it. They actually derive some pleasure from being steeped in the mode of ignorance. So there is pleasure in the material world. Of course, ignorance and passion and even goodness, because there's a competition between the modes of material nature, then passion defeats goodness, goodness defeats ignorance, ignorance defeats passion or goodness, depending on the combination of the modes at that particular time. But Krishna says, happiness in me, in devotional service, is transcendental. So Krishna recommends, ultimately he recommends one needs to pursue transcendental happiness or transcendental goals rather than material goals, because the material world is basically impelled or pushed by the mode of passion, and the mode of passion will ultimately lead us to distress or ignorance. If it's degraded, it leads us into ignorance. Or when one becomes dissatisfied with material existence, then one seeks liberation, then one looks for happiness in the self. The real liberation means to find happiness in the transcendental position, on the transcendental platform. And of course that means whilst we're in the material world, we have to tolerate this asat. Na sato vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha ubayor upidrishtantas tvanayos tatpadarshabhi. The permanent has no cessation. The impermanent has no duration. So even though the material world has is like a reflection. You know, when you look in a mirror, we mentioned this the other day, when you look in a mirror, everything looks real. Right? Unless you've got, you know, those funny mirrors in the department store. We mentioned this the other day. You walk in front of one mirror and it makes you look really fat. You walk in front of another mirror and it makes you look really small. I think they've actually still got the mirrors in David Jones. First floor. You can go there and see it. Well, you know, one mirror makes you look fat at the top, skinny in the middle, then fat at the bottom. Big fat legs. And in fact, that's how the material energy works, because it reflects our characteristic or our nature differently at different times, according to the modes of material nature that we associate with. But if we're looking in an ordinary mirror, if we're looking in a regular mirror, then everything that's reflected looks exactly the same as the original. But of course, when you try to have some sort of relationship with the mirror, the things in the mirror, then it's all only, it's two-dimensional. It's lacking the three-dimensional reality of, well, what we call reality. So, as a result of this transformation, the material energy, it's explaining here, the material energy, originally the pradhana, is one, coming from Brahman, or coming from, you know, it mentions here Brahman, coming from the Brahman. And so there's no variegatedness, it's just all one energy. But then, when Krishna glances over the material energy and imparts within it the living entities, and then by the impetus of the time factor, then everything starts to move, impelled by the mode of passion, which is, you know, mode of passion is characterized by unlimited desires, longings, desires, efforts, endeavor. And so then everything starts to move, and we see the variegatedness of material existence. And as it mentions here, the self-luminous absolute truth exhibits himself in the form of the material variety of the senses, indriya. And of course then we have the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses. The objects of the senses, the mind, the elements of physical nature. So all of these things become manifest. And entangle us, basically. We become entangled in this vehicle made up of the material energy. Ramayan Sabhabhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya, Krishna mentions. Everybody's situated as if on a machine made in the material energy, and we think we are that machine. You know, Prabhupada gives the example of a person who's driving a motor car. And he has an accident and he calls out the other person, "You hit me!" Because he identifies so much with his motor car. So similarly also, even though the material energy is false and well, actually not false, the forms that it creates are false. The material energy itself is real, but the forms it creates are temporary and so therefore false, illusory. But we become conditioned by the material energy, and so we accept that which is false as being real. Or, shall we say, not real, but permanent. We accept it as the permanent situation. Whereas Krishna explains that actually everything is in flux. Everything is in a state of flux, state of change. And that's the, you know, we have the basic, we have the raw, we have the ingredients, if you like, or the same characteristics in the material world. We have that neutral relationship, we have that servitor relationship, we have the friendship, we have the parental rasa, we have our lovers, the conjugal rasa. But it's manifest in a perverted way through the material energy. And so it's just that it doesn't have the full flavour, the full character, the full the fullness of spiritual existence. It has the temporality of material affairs, and so therefore it always gives us trouble. It's designed to give us trouble. The material energy is designed to inflict upon us trouble. And that's to remind us this is not the place to stay. The purpose, especially coming into the human form of life, the purpose of our existence is to actually cut the ties of material attachment and reawaken our original spiritual identity. That's our real business. It's to reawaken our spiritual understanding, spiritual consciousness. As Prabhupada says, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunai. Everybody, each one of us has our original spiritual identity, our Siddha Deha. But unfortunately, we've gone to sleep in the material world, and we're dreaming that we're now Australian, Indian, whatever. Dreaming. Every now and again we have such a nightmare where you sort of wake up. Just like last night I woke up, somebody was giving me the evil eye in a dream, and it was so evil I woke up to the daydream. We wake from our night dream into our daydream, but really we've got to wake up from our daydream and reawaken our spiritual identity. So this section of the Bhagavatam, it's interesting because Krishna is emphasizing here Jnana Yoga and praising Jnana Yoga. And in one sense we use the Jnana analysis, the Sankhya analysis, to help us separate ourselves from the material energy. We have to actually do that. Because our ultimate goal is to come to bhakti, to loving service of Krishna. But in the initial stages, some philosophical understanding that we're not the body, that the material energy is made up of the various elements, and that those elements make up relationships which are ultimately temporary and unsatisfying. Put the batteries in the microphone, thanks. So Krishna's encouraging us, at least in this section of the Bhagavatam, to cultivate jnana, or knowledge of these relationships. I know Vanaswami often comments that in this section of the Bhagavatam the conclusion is that Jnana Yoga is higher than anything else. This is Krishna's conclusion. Although that's not his actual conclusion, but in this section that's what's being emphasized. And of course that jnana understanding is helpful for the devotees. Not that we want to become jnanis. We want to become bhakti yogis, not jnana yogis. But still, in the beginning, some analysis of the material world, some understanding of, theoretical understanding of our spiritual identity is helpful. So that we can make progress on the path of bhakti. One of the reasons why we study Prabhupada's books, and why one of the reasons why we have the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, is so that we can understand some of these philosophical and theoretical underpinnings of material existence and the nature of the relationship between the soul and the material energy, and how the material energy is actually working to cover and condition the originally pure consciousness of the living entity. The real purpose, Krishna's ultimate purpose, is to bring us to the point of bhakti. But in the beginning, one can benefit from these instructions. I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya has clarified this jnana yoga. That we're interested in some bhakti jnana, our relationship with Krishna, with the Vaishnavas, with the conditioned souls, with the deities, and then abhideya jnana, how to behave in that understanding. But not the other jnana, because he said jnana shunya bhakti service. So we're not really into jnana, but we're into understanding the jnana of our relationship.
Yes.
Being connected to the relationship, perhaps you could expand on that.
Well, Lord Chaitanya said, Jivera Swarupoi, as it Nitya Krishna does. So, you know, our original relationship is as a servant. So that's where the Sambandha Jnana teaches us that ultimately we're a servant. And you know, the Sankhya or the Jnana Yoga teaches us that we're a servant of the material energy if we're not a servant of Krishna. You know, we've got to serve somebody or something. But yes, that's Sambandha Jnana, the basis of our relationship. And of course that means our relationship with the material energy, our relationship with Krishna, our relationship with each other, our relationship with the spiritual master, ultimately our relationship with Krishna. So in that sense, we are interested in jnana. You know, we were discussing the other day how Lord Chaitanya was criticized by the Mayavadi sannyasis, Prakashananda and the other, you know, you're just associating with these sentimentalists, chanting Hare Krishna. You're a sannyasi, you should be studying the Vedanta. And, you know, sometimes people mistake the devotees for being sentimentalists because they just see us chanting on the streets and showing an emotional display of, you know, emotional fervor, a religious display. And without understanding the strong philosophical underpinnings of the Krishna consciousness movement, they mistake us for just being a bunch of sentimentalists. And certainly there is emotion and there is sentiment in loving and serving Krishna. It's real. And you can see that. The happiness and the joy of Krishna consciousness is substantial and perceivable. So, the devotees may be mistaken for being sentimentalists, but underpinning all of our so-called sentimentality or emotional, devotional fervor is a very strong philosophical foundation. You know, Prabhupada didn't want his disciples to be seen as being stupid. Mind you, you know, simply having knowledge is not necessarily the goal of existence because, you know, there's how to apply it. And, you know, we were discussing the other day about how in the early 70s and 80s, and maybe even today, the devotees tended to pound people with the Bhagavad Gita. You know, surrender to Krishna. If you don't surrender to Krishna, then, you know, you're a demon, basically, right? And that's one way of, you know, persuading people to surrender to Krishna. But it doesn't work on everybody. And we see when we model the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and put it into practice and behave like the gentlemen and gentlewomen that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to be, and we show affection for everybody, and even if they don't agree with our philosophy, we still show them that same affection and support and give them an opportunity to try to connect with Krishna consciousness, then we actually start to then influence people, and more people, in fact. So there's one thing to be very learned and understand, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul. And I know myself personally, you know, I've used the "you're not the body, Prabhu" argument to you know, defeat people, but probably didn't make friends with anybody. Whereas, you know, when we demonstrate the you're not the body principle, but also care for others and care for them in a spiritual way, and allow for their differences, allow for differences of opinion, or allow for, you know, different ways of doing things, then over time we have a greater impact on people. So it's how you actually, it's not necessarily what you know, but how you put what you know into practice and demonstrate the principles of Krishna consciousness. There's an example I'd like to give, but I'm worried that if I give the example that the people might hear my class, so I don't want to give the example. So you have to come, you have to see me later for the example that I'd like to give, but I can't because I don't want to. Upset anybody.
Put that on pause.
Put it on pause? Can I put this on pause? How do you pause this thing? Maybe too sophisticated for how much we know, so much of what we, how we put it all into practice. How we deal with each other. How we deal with others. how we help people come to Krishna, basically. That's our, that's a real measure of our jnana, if you like. You know, Prabhupada really criticized the brahmanas in India for not distributing knowledge to others, but remaining brahmanas and not wanting to get contaminated by the other castes. But Prabhupada was really against that, because, and especially in Vrindavan, because he's saying, you know, the brahmana's job is to give knowledge to others and give anybody an opportunity to become a brahmana. Not that, oh, we're the brahmanas and you guys can't be. And creating some kind of an elitist group. Which then, as Prabhupada points out, you know, that allowed then the lower castes to multiply and allowed the Muslims to become very powerful and prominent. You know, they would sprinkle water on somebody and then they become a Muslim. And everybody would believe that and accept it. Whereas Prabhupada is saying, you know, the real purpose of the Brahman is to give knowledge so that change people to the point of elevating them out of the bodily concept of life and into the spiritual understanding of their existence, which is the real purpose of knowledge. The purpose of distributing knowledge is to elevate people to the point of understanding, I'm not the body, I'm not a this, that, or the other thing, I'm not a Brahman, not a Kshatriya, not a Vaishya, not a Sudra, not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, etc. But I'm actually Aham Brahmasmi, I'm spiritual by nature. Or Dasoham, I'm actually a servant. I'm a servant of Krishna. So when the Brahmanas don't teach and don't preach, then they're actually not fulfilling their duty, their real responsibility. So, you know, that's why this information is given, why we have the Sankhya philosophy and other philosophies described within the Bhagavatam in great detail. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, we have the very, very basics of Sankhya. You know, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all the kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. It's basic, you know, the ABCs of spiritual understanding. So we have that there, so that we have a very clear philosophical understanding of the basis of Krishna consciousness, which is ultimately to be a servant of Krishna and a loving servant of Krishna, and then of course then a loving servant of Krishna and all of his devotees and Krishna and all of his creation, etc., etc. So here, you know, in this section especially, Krishna, in explaining the Jnana Yoga, is demonstrating the connection between the material energy and ultimately Krishna, or Krishna's spiritual energy, and explaining that a transformation, it still ultimately is Krishna's. Still ultimately is Krishna's energy. And as a result, they're meant to be used in Krishna's service. And of course, Prabhupada mentions, you know, material energy is when it's not being used in Krishna's service, when Krishna's been forgotten. And then even material energy, when it's used in Krishna's service and Krishna is remembered again, then it becomes spiritual. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan. Because we're taking everything and using it all in Krishna's service. Okay. Any other comments, Mahatmaji?
Yeah. I agree with you. Mahaprabhu said in one word, Asasandhya E Vaishnava.
Asasandhya E Vaishnava Cha. Yes.
In one word, he has told the whole, and you gave a very good clear description between material energy and spiritual energy. Ultimately, we come to, again, book distribution. How I became a devotee? Because one devotee gave me a Bhagavad Gita. Long time ago, December 73.
Yep.
That's how I came to know this one.
Yeah.
Well, I will never know what is called And Prabhupada giving everything A, B, C, D.
That's why Prabhupada...
A means association, B means reading books, C is chanting, and D is devotional service.
Yeah. That's why Prabhupada...
everything gets summarized.
Yeah.
We are foolish if we don't do that.
Yes, that's why Prabhupada put so much effort into the books. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
So you said we are sort of a dream right now. So just want further understanding on, is this a reality or is this a totally a dream? Is there any truth in this dream?
Am I really real?
Yes.
Pinch yourself. Just pinch yourself and let me know what happens.
But you said this is a dream.
It's real. You know what? You're here. I'm here. We're about to have breakfast, right? Breakfast is real. But it's temporary, and so therefore, because it's temporary, it's false. The energy itself, existence is real. Because some people have a doubt. Do I really exist? You know, people get in their ear and they say, you don't really exist. Oh, maybe I don't exist. Huh? They actually believe it. Because they're so confused. And everything is illusory. Because it's always changing. Nothing is permanent. As I said, the only thing that's permanent in material existence is that it changes. So... it is bewildering, very bewildering. But even though it is illusory and so therefore false, at the same time it's real. Only our time in the material world is, what should we say? It's limited in the sense that when we're liberated and when we're situated on the spiritual platform, then our existence in the material world will cease. It'll stop. And that's when we will have woken up from our dream and we'll be re-established in our original identity. So, you know, the forms and the characters that we accept as we pass through the various bodies in material existence, they're just temporary, and so therefore not real in that sense, illusory, because they're temporary. When we are freed from that misconception through the process of, by following the process of bhakti and ultimately coming to our original spiritual position, then all of that will be forgotten. Just like, you know, when you wake up in the morning, or when I woke up last night in my dream, what was happening at the time was vivid. But now I can't remember. All I remember was that somebody was giving me an evil eye and that was it. There were other things in the dream, but now I can't remember them. So when we wake up to our spiritual identity, then you forget about all of the dreams, all of the nightmares that you had in material existence. You remember that you were asleep and you had a dream and that was it.
So to what extent this is real?
I said pinch yourself and you'll know it's real. Or would you like me to pinch you? To what extent? It's real. This is Krishna's material energy working on us. So it's real, it's happening. So it's 100% real. 100% bewildering. Huh? Material energy is powerful. Extremely powerful. Of course, as Prabhupada explains, basically it's madan, which is sex desire, which is the ultimate bewildering potency of the material energy that bewilders us. And Prabhupada makes a point, when we become attracted to Krishna, who's Madan Mohan, then all of our affection and attraction for the material energy will be purified, it will be gone, and will be fully attracted to Krishna. When we're purified, when our consciousness is purified, and we realize again our spiritual identity. But at the moment, our sense of identity is covered by the material energy. What Krishna says, Daivi Yesha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatjaya. So this energy is Krishna's divine energy. It has full potency to bewilder us. So that's why we think, you know, I'm an Australian, I'm an Indian, I'm a New Zealander. Whatever. It's 100% effective. Yes. Yeah.
It is permanent. It's this knowledge that comes through it by the force of the absolute truth. And
yes.
It is permanent in this world and every world.
Yep. Although you can forget that too sometimes. We see devotees, they get Prabhupada's, they get the knowledge, but then they forget it.
Oh, you didn't forget it, but the truth itself is nice too.
Yep. Yes, that's true. The Vedas are eternal. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not. Yeah. Okay, we want to start the bathing at 10 o'clock, so we've got half an hour for breakfast and then half an hour for getting ready. Okay?
That's not real.
What was that?
That's
not what?
That's not real.
What do you mean it's not real? Well, when I was in the Sankirtan party, you only got 20 minutes for breakfast. And if you didn't get up and go, then they, you know, you get your breakfast taken away from you. So we're now being so lenient, we give everybody half an hour. And you should be able to do it in half an hour. Anyway, let's see how we go. Try to be here at 10 o'clock. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.